Welcome, everyone. Tonight is the last one in the series. Let's everybody say ah again. All right. Tonight is number six, and I've got some good stuff, man. I'm telling you, just like in the other weeks, God's just spoken to me and given me stuff, and it's real funny. I'm going to talk to Buren about this at some point in time, but because I've never done anything like this, but the first of the week, Buren, does this happen to you? I start out with a lot of stuff, and I just shrink it. It just keeps shrinking, you know, as I go through and looking at it, taking some stuff out here and there. But it's like God just kind of refines everything that he's given me. And some of the stuff I take out, I think, are just lessons for me. That's right, I need them. Okay, a couple of quick announcements, because this is the last Wednesday night for this series. Then we're going to be off next Wednesday night. If anybody wants to invite Kitty and I for dinner, just let us know. And then the following Wednesday night, we start the School of Positive Thinking with Ralph. And there you go. And my first words to you as your coach tonight is don't miss it. You know, Ralph has just got, he has just got this thing, and it's all over him. And I just love being around Ralph. And I look so forward to him starting the school again, and I'm going to try to learn it this time and see what happens, okay? I passed out a piece of paper there, and I've got stuff on the front and the back, and I'll just tell you, what I did was I jotted down the first of the principles that we've talked about for these 6 weeks. Allow your spirit of gratefulness and giving to be developed within you. Pay attention and be responsible. You do those things right there, and everything else will take care of itself. My scripture verse that I had that really speaks to me is Proverbs 4:23. Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. And when it's talking about your heart, like we talked about, it's your mind is what they're saying in Proverbs. That is for you to guard your mind, guard your thoughts. That's where your heart is. That's what that is. Then the rest of that, remember too, just some things that we've talked about all week, just some one-liners, if you will. And on the back, Kitty and I went through some of our books, and we wrote I don't know that that's our 10 favorite books right there, but those are the 10 latest ones, and some of them is our favorite ones. I really got tickled looking at the list. If you'll look at number six, Act Like Success, Think Like Success by Steve Harvey. See, Steve Harvey doesn't fit with the rest of these authors. You know, you look at them. But I'm telling you, it is a great book. Right, Kitty? I bought it when we were in Florida. We were at Sam's, and it was there, and I needed something to read. I picked it up, and I'm telling you, it's just packed full of stuff. He's very funny all the time anyway, but he's got some great stuff in that book about where he's been and how he got to where he is. So, anyway, let's get into it tonight. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for tonight, for the opportunity that we had to come here and hear you, Lord. And I pray during this time that you'll just speak through me. I pray that the words that I say will be your words. In Jesus' name, amen. I'm going to hit all three of our subjects tonight. I'm going to try to hit them, some of them fast and furious, but I'm going to hit them. Money, relationships, and health. And I'm going to be real quick on money, because we really spent almost 2 weeks on money. But here's the thing I wanted to talk about money tonight. First of all, I got in trouble the first night because Ken actually told me, he said, you've done good the first four weeks. You got into this money thing, you started meddling a little bit. So I'm going to meddle just a little bit more, but it'll be short and sweet for you. I was asked the question by several people after the week before last, actually, about money and how you figure, how you handle your money if you don't make a steady income. In other words, if you work in a field where your pay may fluctuate week to week, depending on what you do. And they were asking me, how do you do that? Because what I had told them is, you know, you have to sit down, you got to write down what's coming in, what's going out, try to make it balanced, keep a little for yourself, don't go overboard. But my answer to that is actually twofold. One is, you should be able to average what you make a month based on where you are, whatever it is, okay? You should be able to take what you've made so far this year and figure out what your average is for the month, or monthly, I'll say. But I realize that doesn't always work. So what you would do is you reverse it a little bit, because most people that make that kind of money are really more in control of how much they work or how little they work. So you reverse it and you figure out what you have to have. That's what you earn that week, okay? And you got to go do it. So if you're providing a service to somebody and you know that you've only got six jobs, but to meet your budget you got to get eight, then you got to hustle a little bit. But it can be done. You just got to go do it. See, the worst thing to do is just say, "Oh well, I'm not going to get it this week," because you won't. That's how it works. If you say you want, it won't. So that's the two ways to do it. You got to either average it out, or either you have to already have written down what you got to have each month, what are your requirements, and then you got to make sure you make it during that month. So you have to figure that out. The last little piece about money is one that we didn't talk about, and that is a budget. Nobody likes to hear the word budget, usually, all right? But I'm here to tell you that if you don't have a budget written down, you've got a budget, okay? Everybody has a budget. The difference is whether you manage it or not. That's the difference. That's part of the piece of writing it down. It's so easy for us to go through our lives day in and day out and just kind of let life happen, especially with our finances. We let things catch us off guard. For instance, I'll talk a little bit about this in relationship. I hope everybody knows what Saturday is, right? Because Saturday is Valentine's Day. And it's February 14th every year, okay? See, it's the same concept with the budget, that you can operate and act like you don't know it's coming, but it's coming. So you have a budget, and it's just way too loose. So you need a budget. You need to be able to write down. And don't be afraid of a budget, because what I tell people, a budget is a guide. That's what it is. Right, Joe? Where are you, Joe? Keith? It's a guide is what it is. It's just a guide. But it's a guide to keep you on track is what happens. And you realize, like I shared some stuff about Kitty and I, when we do stuff, I mean, we know that if something's coming up and we have to spend a little more money over here than what we were budgeted to spend, then that means we can't spend quite as much over here. They have to balance out. So that's all that is. So that's the quick lesson on money, okay, for you tonight, so you can settle down about that. The rest of this first part is I want to just go back over some of the things about setting our mindset, because, see, your philosophy and your attitude of how you view life creates your world. It's what Ralph says all the time. He says, you create your world. I remember when I first started hearing him say that, it really didn't click with me. But I finally learned that I decide what my world's going to be like every day. I make that decision. There's a lot of things that happen, but I still have to know that I'm in charge for how I react to those things. For instance, sometimes some of our attitudes, everybody knows that today was a beautiful day, right? In the 60s, gorgeous. I even went on my computer and looked at the schooner cam down at Panama City just to look at the beach, and there was two people actually sitting on the beach out there, and I was thinking, man, you know. But it was a beautiful day, but if you've paid any attention to the weather, it's going to change, isn't it? And I ran into this lady this afternoon. It was about 2:30. I had to go down in the other building. I was coming back, and I spoke to her. I said, "Hey, how you doing?" "Fine." She said, "I know." She said, "I know it's pretty out there today, but it's just going to be awful. It's going to be awful. This is terrible," you know. And I threw her off guard because I said, "No, it's not. It's going to be great." And she said, "Did they change the forecast?" And I said, "They did in mine. Because whatever it is, I'm going to enjoy it. I'm just going to enjoy it." So it really all comes down to how you view things, whatever your philosophy is. See, the secret to this, to changing your mindset, to change everything the way you look at things, is this. You got to know it. The second part is you got to believe it. See, if you take one or the other out, it's not complete. I can know a lot of stuff, but if I don't really believe it, that's an element that's missing that really takes away from the know. I might believe certain stuff, but if I'm not educated, if I don't know, like this right here, how to change my mindset, then it doesn't work. So you got to have both of them. You got to be able to know and believe who you are. We first started this thing, and I told you that from my perspective, the way this has to work is I want you to believe in you. You have to believe in you. You have to completely change your attitude. There was a time, and it still is, you know, in the South, I think we twisted humble, the word humble, around a little bit too much. Because a lot of us grew up where we grew up thinking that to be humble would mean that we would make ourselves less than. And by doing that, see, what we did was we reduced ourselves. But we were humble, right? You see, we misinterpret sometimes God's word when he tells us that we're to be humble, because it doesn't mean that we should look at other people and lower ourselves below them. It basically means that we should respect them, that we should love them, that we should have compassion for them, that we should not take ourselves and try to raise ourselves up. One of the things that Ralph teaches that I have, the way to work this thing is this: I'm no better than anybody else, and I'm no less than anybody else. We're all the same. See, I can look around the room. We're all from different places. We all come from different backgrounds. There's differences in all of us, but we're all, guess what? God's children, period. And that's how you have to look at it. Now, the first part I wanted to talk to you tonight is about how powerful your mind is. When I've started my coaching with my clients that I have, I like to call them team members, but I say clients sometimes, but I told Ralph, I said, I just like team members. I'm coaching. So when I'm coaching my team members, there's a piece that we want to go to first, and I try to explain to them just how powerful their mind is. And I want you to just think about this for a second. Your mind has recorded everything that you've ever tasted, touched, saw, smelled, all of those things. It's all there. It's all in there. And we have a hard time bringing it back up from time to time, don't we? Just when we want to. But see, your mind is so powerful, it has recorded everything. Everything. It's in there. You know yourself that sometimes you may have an odor that you might smell that'll remind you maybe of a vacation. I mean, is everybody here, you ever smell Coppertone? Where does that take you? Your mind brings it back. And that's the way our mind, it has recorded everything that you've ever smelled, tasted, touched, saw, all those things. It's powerful. It's powerful. I want to tell you a story tonight. And I want you to listen to it a little bit from the side, from that right there, of just how powerful our minds and our brain can be. On January 15th, 2009, U.S. Airways Flight 1549, an A320 airplane, took off from LaGuardia at 3:25 in the afternoon. It was a cold day, as you might expect in January. The plane had 150 passengers on board and 5 crew members. They took off on time. Everything's great. They had been in the flight for 3 minutes, and a flock of geese crossed the path of the airplane. Most of you probably know the story, but just listen to me. I like telling stories. Flock of geese went in front of the airplane, and the geese were ingested into the engines, and the captain, and you know him as Captain Sully. Captain Sully lost all his engine, all power for his engines. Here's a man that's at 3,000 feet with 154 people plus him on board on an A320 airplane, 3,000 feet above the largest city in the world. He didn't have any engines. They're gone. If you've ever listened to it, and I would encourage you to Google it, go in and watch the documentary on that thing, man. Because see, I love... Dustin, you can tell Chris this. Pilots are just amazing people. They are. But this will give you an idea about the mind, okay? When you listen to the conversation between the pilot and the people in the tower right here, it's just like this. He's talking like, there's nothing's up. No reason to get in any hurry. Don't be scared. See, what I want you to think about is, think about if you were sitting in one of those seats. Think about where your mind went. Where would it go? Now bring it even, think if you were sitting in the left seat in the front, in that captain's seat, where would your mind go? What would it do? What would happen? You see, I love this story. I was telling Brandon about it the other day, and we were talking about it, and went and looked it up some more and read about it and listened to the documentary. Because you know the rest of the story. You know what happened. He wound up taking that airplane and gliding it into the river, and nobody died. Everybody survived. Only a few minor injuries altogether. So you know what happened with the story. Now here's the piece we need to really pay attention about our mind, everything that goes in here and takes place. See, when this was happening, Captain Sully was already in his mind recalling what he's learned. See, his mind was not, when that plane lost both engines, his mind did not go into the what-if modes. His mind did not go into what do I not do. He didn't go with any of that. His mind immediately went into gear to do something that, I'm going to tell you, in his mind and in his training, he's already done this. He's already been here. He's been here. See, those guys go through some amazing things, but what they're taught to do is when things like that, see, the worst thing that any of us can do is when something goes wrong is to panic. Because remember what I told you about your mind, how powerful it is and everything that's been recorded? When you panic, you engage buttons that start firing things in your mind and makes it go into all different directions. And when that happens, there's chaos and there's confusion. But see, here's the thing. Captain Sully had already been there. He already knew what to do. He knew what he was going to do. And if you'll go listen to that thing on YouTube, to that documentary, it's really comical and it's fun and it make your skin crawl just listening to it, you know, because the FAA is trying to tell him how to get to an airport. And he's trying to tell them, I don't have any engines. I can't make it to an airport. I have to find somewhere to set this plane down. And he already knew the only place to set it down in New York City is in the water. It's the only place. Now, I'm telling you, I get chill bumps thinking about it. Because here's a man who's in an A320 airplane with 154 people on board. And he's about to do something, stay with me here, never been done before. Nobody's ever done it before. Nobody's done it. Exactly, Ralph. See, the thing that I want to get to here is how Captain Sully, what he focused on, and that he was prepared. You see, everything he had done in his life brought him to that moment right there. What you need to understand, if you don't already know about Captain Sully, he was an expert glider pilot. That's what he did when he was not flying airplanes. He liked to fly glider airplanes. The man was an expert with it. But here, okay, I'm going to tell you where my mind goes right here. I don't care how big of an expert you are. An A320 doesn't glide. Okay? It doesn't glide. It's too heavy. It's too heavy. But see, God had prepared him for that very moment right there. Everything he's already done, not knowing that on that day, on January 15th, 2009, that's where he was going to be. But he'd been prepared for it. So what did he do? He did what nobody else had ever done before and what the people in the tower and the FAA were trying to talk him out of, that he can't do it. But see, he already knew that that's the only way to save this thing. It's the only way. So that's what he did. He went and he took that airplane, and most of you, you've seen it, clips of it on TV or whatever. He brought that thing down perfectly, knowing how to take the wind, the whole nine yards with the wings and whatever. He still had power with the flaps and the other things that he does, you know, to make it. And he just set that thing down on the water, perfect. See, if he'd have panicked, or if he would have been wondering and doing, all it would have taken was for that thing just to be off a little bit. that plane would have just exploded. It would have just turned in the water and boom, busted in all kinds of pieces. But see, he knew that's what he was going to do. He wasn't worried about the rest of that. He didn't think about the what ifs. He didn't think, well, what if the wing goes down a little bit? See, that's not where his focus was. His focus was on, I know what this plane has to do. I'm going to keep it level and steady, and we're going to set it down on this water, and we're going to eat dinner at a restaurant in New York City in just a little while. That was his mindset. Listen to some of those tapes. I'm telling you, it's just amazing to me. See, that was a great moment in aviation history. It was a great moment for the United States. Wasn't it? I mean, everybody was, holy cow, this guy is a hero. He is a hero. It was a great moment. What I want to tell you tonight, positive thinking in your minds, is we're all destined for great moments in our lives, okay? Now, you may not be on ABC News showing your great moment, okay? But see, your great moment may be when you buy somebody a meal. Your great moment may be when you buy somebody gas. Your great moment may be when you encourage somebody who's down. That nobody else will hear about it, but see, that's God prepares you for that. And when the time comes, that's your moment. That's your moment right there. And you may have a lot of moments, a lot of great moments. So God has prepared you for that, and he is preparing you that way, but it all starts with what we're talking about. And Ralph, I've already given you the commercial for we're going to the school of positive thinking. This is what it all starts about is how you think. It's how you think. It's how you see things, okay? You know, one of the things that we say here is that when you change the way you think, the things you look at change. You don't think Captain Sully saw that river different than anybody else would have? It was completely different. Completely different. See, as far as he was concerned, it was a runway. It was a runway. He was just going to set it down, and he did just exactly that. The other thing that I want to tell you about what happened in that plane that day was he was not alone. He was not alone. Nobody likes to be alone, do you? Especially when there's a tough scenario. Everybody likes to know somebody's with me. Are you with me? You know? You got my back? Everybody wants somebody with you. See, there were a lot of people on that airplane, but when that was taking place, God and Sully were together, and he was with him. See, the message I want to have for you today for positive thinking and how getting your mind right is this. God was not off, as Ralph says, off there, out there somewhere, sending messages to Sully. He wasn't way out there saying, it's okay, son, it's okay, son. See, he was closer than that. He was inside of him. He was inside of him. They were together doing that, okay? And he knew what was fixing to take place. Now, the thing is that you got to understand, and I've got to understand, we all got to understand, that it's the same way with me and you. It's exactly the same way with me and you. Now, we get hung up with it sometimes. Ken talked about it last week because we had a conversation while we were skiing and somebody had, we were having church one morning, and we were talking about God being in us. See, a lot of us may have grown up thinking that God is way off there, up there somewhere, some other place. And because of that, sometimes we think we're lessening God when we bring him down here to be in little old me. Okay? We think that in our mind, don't we? Think about it for yourself. Okay? God is in you. All right? But a lot of times we get hung up thinking that he can't be actually in me because I'm me, and why would he be in me, you know? He'd be in Ralph, you know, or Buren, but not me. No, see, God is in you. He's in each one of us. And because he's there, he provides all that we need when we need it, and we have the opportunity to have our moment. And again, it may happen a number of times, okay? So thinking about that story right there, I want you to hold on to this now. That's how powerful your mind is. That's how powerful your mind is. See, what you got to understand is I will guarantee you that Captain Sully, there were fires, little moments in his mind that might have put a piece of doubt in there, but he took it away every time. He did not let anything get in his way. Whatever tried to penetrate him by thinking, can you do this? Yes, I can. Okay? Is this going to work? Yes, it is. It will, and it does. See, we have the same thing. We're tapped in the same way. All right? I want to move into our health just a little bit. 3 John chapter 1, verse 2 says, "Beloved, I wish above all things that you may prosper and be in health, even as your soul prospers." Now, we've discussed health a little bit over the previous 5 weeks, how that your health is affected by your relationships and your finances. Everybody knows that. You see, if a husband and wife are having trouble, one of two things will happen as far as their health go. They're either not going to eat because they're depressed, or they're going to eat too much. One of the two. When you have problems, love problems, it affects your body. And I've gone through stuff before, back where things happened, my appetite was gone. Didn't eat. So relationships can affect your health. If you are lacking money and you got people knocking on your door, it'll affect your health. Same thing applies. They all intermingle. But tonight I want to try to focus a little bit more on the health aspect. See, there are two parts of this the way I see it. What we take in and how we burn it off. Just like I told you when we started the finances, I said it's really simple. Keep it as simple as possible. In finances, it's addition and subtraction. That's all. There's nothing else. You got that. You learn it very early in life. Same thing with your health. It's what you take in and what you burn off. It's extremely simple. We make it complicated a lot of times, but that's how simple it is. When we talk about health, one of the first words that's going to come up is, well, one of two words is going to be what? Diet and exercise. Two dirty words, right? Nobody likes either one of those words. You know why you don't like those words? Is because we put it in our mind and we're conditioned to believe we think about it because they're restrictive. That's why those two words seem to not be good to us, is because they're restrictive. Diet and exercise means I either got to do something or I don't get to do what I want to do. It's restricted. Makes us think that way. But it's absolutely necessary to do both. See, it depends on how you look at it. Because just what I said, there are companies that make millions of dollars selling diet products. There's companies that make millions of dollars make exercise products. And a lot of those companies are not really interested in your health or your diet. They're interested in your money. And I'm not saying they're not all bad, but you know what I'm saying? That's what they're in business for. If you think different, I'm sorry. Because that's what they're in business for, is to make money. All right? The health is a side note. I hope it works for you, but I really want to sell you this, if you'll use it, okay? That's how it works. But it really depends on how you look at it. Because, see, we look at those two words as being restrictive, and what I want us to get today is that it's the opposite of restricted. Those two words create freedom. Those two words create freedom. Remember earlier, a couple of weeks ago, I was telling you how there's so much of this stuff that you look at it, and see, exercise, some people could look at that as a negative. It's a positive. You look at a diet and your mind may go, that's a negative, but it's a positive. It's not what it appears, okay? So those two things have to be dealt with. You've all seen people that you've run into somebody that you hadn't seen in a while and they're in great shape and you want to know what they did, and they tell you. And you usually walk away, I do it too, walk away and you're like, that won't work for me, you know. You see that they got results by doing one certain thing, but we tend to look at it like, what we're all waiting for is for Dr. Hitson to write us a prescription that says you can eat whatever you want and you can watch TV as long as you want. And all your numbers will be good, right, Dr. Hitson? That's, that's what all of us want, but it's not going to happen. Not going to happen. Okay. That's for the doctors only. Some of you may or may not know this, and this is a commercial, but I am working on my personal training certification. I got two more parts of a final test, and I'll have that. But when I was studying that thing, I went back and I looked at it for tonight, and I looked. One of the things that jumped out of me is a statistic, and the statistic is staggering for me. But it said that 5% of adults, only 5%, exercise 30 minutes a day. Only 5%. Now, 30 minutes is not long, is it? Except when you put the word exercise in front of it. Then it kind of stretches out a little bit. Now, 30 minutes is 30 minutes. It's a TV show, right? And I'm not going to ask everybody here to raise your hand if you exercise 30 minutes a day, because statistically there wouldn't be a whole lot of them that would go up. But that's a staggering statistic, and you have to ask yourself, why? What keeps us from exercising? What keeps us from trying to be healthy? And with that, my wife, Kitty, is going to share a few things. Caught her. She wasn't ready. You're up.
Okay. Sorry. Actually, what you asked me to share was what continues to motivate me to exercise. And I really thought he would like want me to talk about the kinds of exercises or things that I do as far as writing down what I eat, so on and so forth. And so he kind of threw me for a loop when he said, what continues to motivate you to exercise? I have exercised all my life. My parents, I know I've used them as an example before, but I'm going to use them as an example again tonight. They set a wonderful example for me growing up because they found the kinds of exercises that they enjoyed, and they did them all the time. Daddy always had a policy that if he got 5 pounds over his ideal weight, it was coming off. I mean, he did, like what Joey was saying earlier about finances, he did whatever needed to be done to get back to that, what he called his fighting weight, okay? And I think that, of course, was my first example of how important exercise is in your life because it was just a part of their daily life. And so that's what I grew up seeing. I grew up seeing us eat healthy food and not eat fried food, things like that. And so I did have a wonderful example. And you may say, well, I didn't have that example. Well, that doesn't mean that you can't start that for your family and start a new legacy. So that was my very first example, was just that my parents set that good example in front of me. And the rest of it is really what Joey's been saying and Bjorn and Ralph, and that is that, you know, when we respect and honor and love ourselves, then we're able to give to other people. And I shared a couple of weeks ago that for me that is the ultimate goal in my life, is to be able to just give as much of myself away as possible. And I feel like that I can do that if I'm strong and healthy and fit. And I just feel like that makes me be able to give to other people. It is a discipline. It's like Joey said, 30 minutes doesn't sound long. I love that, until you say exercise, you know. But I plan it also. I plan it when I look at my day or my week, I plan exercise just like you set a date to meet a friend for lunch, or you know you're going to work so many hours a day and you've got this event at night. We usually look at our next week on the weekend before that, and we kind of plan our weeks out. Now, do things come up? Sure they do. But then if they do, I might exercise a little bit more the next day if I have to miss a day. And I am one of those that exercises 30 minutes every day. But my ultimate reason, and like I said, in being continued to be motivated to exercise, is for my grandkids. Because I can run and play with my grandkids. I can climb the monkey bars. I can go down the slide. The other day, Braxton was riding his bike, and most of you have not seen him do this, but he rides his bike like unbelievably fast, and he wanted me to run beside him. And so I was literally sprinting, you know, just running as fast as I could, and he was turning around going, go, Nan, go, go, Nan, go. But, I mean, that I want to be there for them, you know, and I want to be able to do fun things for them. And so I believe that part of my continuing to be, you know, disciplined to exercise and plan that into my schedule is for my grandkids and for anybody that I can help in any area. So.
Yeah. Thank you, Kitty. So, what is exercise? Define it. See, when we think, and I'm just going to speak to everybody here, if you're not doing it, you need to. And so when I say you need to exercise, where does your mind go when I say that? It most likely goes into something that's really hard. Because, see, that reinforces the reason why I'm probably not going to do it anyway. See, we jump out and we think, well, I got to join a gym, and I got to be able to run like Barbara does, some of the rest of them, and you don't. All that's great, and you can build up to be there, but that's not what this is about. See, here's what exercise is. It's going to be my definition. It's movement. It's movement, okay? It can be a casual walk up and down your street, a casual walk around your house. You have to start somewhere. But that's what exercise is. And so what you need to do, if you're not part of that 5%, is start scheduling some time to move, to do something, to gardening, working in your yard, you know, on a regular basis. But you can come up with all sorts of different things. So exercise can be, you can define it a lot of different ways. See, what happens is we get to a point to where we have this critical place in our mind when we say we're going to exercise, and that critical place is where when our mind starts whispering to us why we should or shouldn't do it. It'll do it. Because remember what I told you very early on is your mind has recorded everything you've ever seen, touched, tasted, all of that, okay? So most likely, you had PE when you were in school, and it may not have been very, very nice at times, or you've had to do things physical that were hard. And see, that's where your mind goes. Your mind first off starts telling you, don't know about this. But see, that's what we've been talking all along is you control your mind. You control it. And so you can change those thoughts. See, that's the thing of turning it around into a positive. Turn it around. So at that critical moment, you know what to do. A lot of people use an excuse of not exercising because they say they don't have the energy. They don't have the energy. Now, when God created the world, he created energy, okay? I'm going to tell you a secret you may or may not know. See, energy produces more energy, okay? Sitting does not produce energy, all right? So when you say you don't have the energy, it's because the energy is not being produced within you. Because here's the thing that it's hard to get past, because you say people who do exercise will tell you, I have more energy than I've had before. It actually works. But you have to get to the point to where that actually works. See, in the beginning, it's not going to be that way. In the beginning, your mind's going to work on you. You're going to tell you, this is not good. I like my chair. I like my TV program, whatever it is. But when you push through, and you keep pushing and you keep pushing, in a very short period of time, see, your mind kicks in to another level. And your mind starts telling you, because here's another thing that you may or may not know, but your body hungers for exercise. It does. That's what it was made to do. Okay? Is to move. And when we don't move, that's what your body really yearns for. Some of you may not believe me, but I'm telling you, try it. Try it. And there's a lot of different things we can do for your health. Paying attention to what you eat, how much you eat, how much you drink, all of those things is that you watch it and you pay attention, and that's one of the principles that we use. So we could continue to focus on excuses that we make about not exercising, but what I wanted to do now is kind of move in a different realm with it. Instead of talking about excuses, let's talk about the benefits, okay? Because see, to get started, the first thing that has to happen is you have to make your mind up. And you may have an argument with your mind. I was telling somebody the other day, because I have exercised probably for 30 years or more, at least 30, 35 years. And there are times when I still have an argument with myself. Well, I don't want to today. You're going. But I don't want to. Well, you're going. It's on the schedule and you need to. And so I go do it. And there are some times when the other side wins. But I don't let it happen very often. But you have to make your mind up that you want to do it and then make the change. What I want to make sure you understand, think back about Sully in that airplane. See, when Sully was 20 years old, do you think somebody could have sat him down and said, one day in 2009, you're going to glide an airplane down and land it on water? No. He would not have believed that, would he? There's no way that he would have believed anything like that. But what I want you to know is that your mind is more disciplined than you think it is. See, if you'd asked him that back then, he didn't realize how disciplined his mind was. He didn't know how disciplined he was actually going to be. What is available to him. And we all have it. We all have the ability to be disciplined. You just have to engage it, okay? All right. Let's talk about some of the things that it will do for you. It will earn you a better quality of life. And what does that mean? A better quality of life. Papa told me to watch a video. Some of you may have saw it. I can tell you where it is afterwards, but it's an example where a professor takes a jar and puts golf balls in it and asks the kids if the jar is full. Have y'all seen that? It's really kind of a really neat thing, because it teaches them a little lesson about life. But the one thing in that video that got me and talked to me about, that got me that I could apply it for this tonight was this part, quality of life. Because this is what it said. Your quality of life is your gift to you. Your quality of life is your gift to you. How much better can it be? And see, that goes back to everything we've been learning here. We're going to learn even more in the School of Positive Thinking, but it's the way we think and the way we look at things and what we put in our heads and how we think about it. See, I'm not sure what your quality of life is like right now, but here's what I do know. No matter what level you're on, it can be better if you want it to be. See, that's the thing. Everything is a choice, right, Ralph? Everything's a choice. And so you get to decide, but I like that. Your quality of life is your gift to you. If you take care of your health, good health will lift your spirits. It'll make you a different person. It will absolutely make you a different person. It'll enhance your relationships with everybody. You'll make better decisions about everything you do, including your finances. You'll start to believe in you, which is what I wanted to do as a coach, that you are capable of doing many things. See, that's what happens. When you engage yourself with any exercise, whether it's running, whether it's walking, no matter what it is, lifting weights, swimming, any of those things, the more you do it and you start to feel it and you start looking in that mirror, you start seeing yourself different. And I'm not necessarily just talking about the physical change that's going on. It does something inside of you. It does something inside of you that's even above the benefit of your physical health. So those are some of the things that it'll do for you. It'll start to make you believe you're capable of doing many things. And it will give you the opportunity to inspire other people. And it'll give you a mindset that you're capable of doing many things. See, I do some things exercising that I didn't think I could do. And I do some things right now that I still wouldn't think I could do. But when I do them and when I walk out of there, I'm a step above off the ground. Okay? That's what it'll do for you. Those are some of the things. All right. Moving on to relationships, and I'm going to meddle just a little bit. We don't have a whole lot of time, but I'm going to meddle. Proverbs 13:20 says, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companions of fools will suffer harm. Wow. Here's a question for you. Who are your friends? Okay? Who are your friends? Now, I'm not standing up here tonight to tell you to get rid of your friends. Okay? I'm not. What I'm going to tell you to do, though, is you better be paying close attention to how they are influencing you. Okay? One of the books that's on the back of that sheet is Simplify, and one of the things in there he's got a section in there about your friends. And I told you a little while back, maybe on the first one, about how the when a person dies, how many people average come to a funeral, how many of them come to visitation, then come to the funeral, and only 25 to 30 people are going to go with you to the gravesite. That's it. So they're not going to be there. But in that little section there, he also says something. He says that that when he was a little boy, his daddy would say, "Be careful who you associate with, because stupid rubs off." And he said, you know, it's an old Southern thing. I'd never heard that before, but he said, "Stupid rubs off," when he was little kids. Exactly. And all he was saying is, be careful where you go and who's influencing you. Who's influencing you? Because here's what I want to tell you, no matter what your age is, right here, your friends influence you. They influence you. They can make changes. I also pulled another scripture out, and this is going to be a little bit odd, but bear with me, and let me show you what it said to me when I was searching through some scripture. Because it's only going to be a piece of a story. But this is actually in Matthew. And it says, this is when Judas betrayed Jesus. Verse 47 says, "While he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived with him with a large crowd, armed with swords and clubs, sent from the chief priests and the elders of the people." When I read that verse, you know where mine went? I wonder how many people in that crowd with clubs really didn't want to go where they were going. I wonder how many people that were with that group that went to get Jesus were only going because there's a crowd going. Something's happening. Okay? I wondered how many people got involved in that, picked into, just jumped in there with them and went to this moment in history having no idea that they were just following a crowd and they were there. See, that kind of spoke to me when I read that verse. And I don't think I've ever read it and thought about it that way, other than when I was preparing for this piece of it, because the relationship piece I want to talk to you about is your friends. It's who that you spend your time with. And again, I want to say the purpose of this piece part here is not to be negative, and it's not to tell you to do away with your friends, but you have to ask yourself, who are you following? Who are you following? See, one of the things that I learned when I was coaching ball with kids is this, and I watched a lot of other coaches do it, and yeah, I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I'm the brilliant one that came up with this idea, okay? When I would first start out practice, it would never fail. It's just this way. You might have five or six kids that knew how to catch and throw real good. And you may have five and six not too good. And you may have one or two that didn't even know what a baseball was till they got there that day, okay? I watched some other coaches and I learned from them, because I realized that I want the kid that doesn't know what a baseball is to pitch with the best one I got. See, a lot of other coaches would take the good players over here and we're going to make them better. And these guys over here, I hope you get over here, but keep working at it, keep working at it. And see, I realized that when they're over here, they never get to see the right way to do it. They don't get to watch it. They don't get to be with it. So I would take the kid who couldn't throw and put him with the one that could throw the best. And I would tell them, teach him how to throw. Watch him. Mimic him. See everything that he does. And see, that's what has to happen with you and your friends. Okay? That's what has to happen, is you have to be careful that you're not with a group that just doesn't get it. You're not with a lot of people who just, they don't get it. Because all of you here know some people who get it. You need to pitch with them, okay? You need to pitch with them. You need to be with them at times. And I'm not telling you get rid of your other friends, because here's the ultimate goal is, I want you over here pitching with these folks, then you go pitch with them. Then you go pitch with them. You know what happens then? Same thing that happened when I coached a lot of times. We wound up with a good team. Because everybody learned how to pitch and throw. Everybody learned how to catch. Everybody learned from one another. But it would not have happened separate. I have to get them over here, the guys that get it. So your friends, you got to be careful. There are all kinds of different friends. We have casual friends, and we have friends that we hang out with, and then you have your mentors. And those are the people you got to latch on to. Okay? See, just be careful where you take all your information from and what, like I said, who you're following and what you're listening to. Because sometimes without any intent, they lead you astray. So you need a mentor. You need somebody that you can call on. You need somebody that you can absolutely trust, somebody that'll tell you the truth. Because friends will rub off on you. Stick close to those that you can learn from and be strengthened from. Just like I was giving that example there, watch and learn to grow. So where do we go from here? We've only got about 10 more minutes. We've discussed and we've learned how powerful our minds are and that our minds control everything. Life, listen to this part for me. I know you're listening all along, but listen here. Life is always in motion. Every day, we're either on the path to getting better or trending down. One of the two. See, life is a continual motion. We're just about finished with today. Matter of fact, I may be asleep by 8:30. I don't know, but we're just about through for today. But you know what? Tomorrow starts again, and it's in motion. And see, tomorrow when I get up, I decide whether I'm going to keep trending upward or I'm going to back up, go down the other way. Okay? Everybody gets to make that decision. I want you to remember this. Positive people live in a world of responsibility. They understand responsibility. People that are trending down, they live in a world of blame and excuses. That's their world. That's why we don't exercise. That's why we don't take care of our finances. That's why we stay with the people and our friends who don't know how to pitch and throw. Okay? Those are the two things. Positive people live in a world of responsibility. People trending down live in a world of blame and excuses. Positive people, this is good. Positive people are pulled by the future. People who struggle are being pulled by the past. Every time. So you get to decide, where are you going? Where are you going? Are you being pulled by what's out in front of you? Or are you worried about everything that's back here and you're just trying to drag all that along, pull it with you? That's the question. No matter where you are at any moment, you can choose to step into the positive world. It's that simple. It is that simple. I've told you before, when Ralph and I first started talking, so many times, the light came on for me, like I told you when he gave me the sermon on Joshua and the Battle of Jericho. But so many times as we were having talks, man, the light just kept coming on. And it just kept saying, this is so simple. It's so simple. It's just as easy. It's a decision is all it is. Every day of your life, all day long, making the decision. It is. And you can get pulled into the other side, but it's a decision. It's a decision. See, the change has to start with you. What are you going to do to make it happen? It's the little things that add up. I'm going to stop right here. I got just a little bit more, but we may not have time for what I've got left. But I do want to give some time for some testimonies because we've got about 5 minutes. And I know my son Brandon has already talked to me. He wants to share a word tonight, so I'm going to ask Brandon to come up. And you get ready.
I had a lot to say sitting through this these few weeks with my dad. A lot of things just kept coming up and up because he talks about baseball all the time. And I just want to tell you, he really was the greatest coach in the world. He's not just saying that stuff. I had two heroes growing up. One was Chipper Jones. These are not in any order. And one was my dad. And I just wanted to share with you everything that I learned in baseball, I can use in life, and I never even thought about it, that he was talking about. And he's just brought it to life over the past couple weeks. Like he just said, how he put the guys who couldn't throw with the people who could. I always have had a heart to encourage, and I got it from my dad, because I watched him do that kind of stuff. And you would be amazed, and I'm just going to speak because he wouldn't say it, but we had the best team every year. And it didn't. It wasn't these leagues that, you know, you handpick your team. We had guys down at the bottom of the barrel that came that couldn't throw, couldn't hit, couldn't do anything. And my dad would encourage them and would use us other kids. I knew that we were all the same. He never treated me any different than he treated the guy who couldn't play. And that's the same way in life. I want to encourage people, and I know why I have this instilled in me is because I've just been around it my whole life. Dad has been a positive person. You know, he's just came to life with meeting Ralph and all, but Dad has been doing it his whole life. I just wanted to share just a couple stories, and I'll quit. But his ministry is called Mojo Ministries. I kind of came up with that because when we were when we were kids, when there was a moment in a game that we needed something to happen, not just any time, my dad would call you to third base, and he'd say, let me put a little mojo on your bat. He'd get down on his knee, and he'd say, give me your bat. And he'd grab some dirt, just dirt. It was just dirt. And he'd rub it on your bat, on the barrel of your bat. And I promise you that 9 times out of 10, no matter who it was, when they got in the batter's box, they got a hit, scored a run. Maybe it was a winning run. He went and do it all the time. Trust me, they all asked, you gonna put a little mojo on my bat? He wouldn't do it just to do it. He only did it when he needed to put that positive energy in them to get up there and to give them, you know, the know that they're going to get up there and they're going to get a hit. I shared with Ralph, this isn't anything like Captain Sully's moment, but I had a moment when I was a when I was a child. I don't remember if I was in 11 and 12. I take that back. It was a moment to me. To me, it was. When I was wearing 11 and 12-year-old, we were in an all-star game, and man, we went up against this team that had a pitcher that he was probably 6'2", you know? And I remember we played them the first game, and honestly, everybody on my team, we were scared to death. And we played them, and I don't think anybody hardly got a hit, not one of us. Well, we kept going through the tournament, and we beat everybody else. Well, we get back to the championship game. Well, guess who we're playing? Oh, we're playing that team from LaGrange with the 6'2" guy. I will never, ever, ever forget this, that my dad, I remember riding to the park that day. He encouraged me so much that I knew I was going to get a hit. I was leading off. He told me, son, I know you can do it. I remember this. And I'll never forget. I got in that batter's box. Boom, base hit the center field. I don't know if we won the game. I wasn't the only one to get a hit. Did we win the game? We won the game. Okay. That doesn't matter because that was my moment right there. But what I'm here to say is just encouraging people, you know, whether whatever it is, it's just something that is just incredibly awesome. And what I have really grasped onto over these past couple weeks is just to use the encouragement that I know that I have and to use that in everyday life, in baseball and coaching my kids. I'm gonna do the same thing with those kids. I told Ralph, I had struggled for a while. I've always wanted to be a coach, and I was like, I don't know if I can be a coach like my dad. But then I realized the other day, I can be like my dad, and I can be better than my dad. And I can use these tools and just keep it going. But it's not just baseball. It's anything. It's everyday life. But I just wanted to share that with you guys.
Anybody else? Going once? Anybody else got a word? Okay. Thank you, Brandon, for that. Because those are special moments between a father and a son. You know, things that he told me. I've shared with Ralph that, like, those moments right there, because I remember the day that Brandon's talking about, too. I remember riding to the game that day. But, see, I wanted us to win that game, but there was another motive in there more than anything else. I wanted him to know I believed in him. I wanted him to know, because I'm going to share with you quickly. I know it's 7:30, because there's another story where I made a mistake. I don't know if he remembers it. He probably does. But I remember one time when I tried to never get upset at a game. I tried to just stay even with kids. I would show excitement, but if things didn't go well, I did not want to see them to see me worried at all. And it turned out that we were in a tough spot, and Brandon was at the plate, and Coach Don Pierce was telling him what to do, but he only struck out like 3 times when he was in 9 and 10, but he struck out with the tying run at third base. And I was in the dugout. And the worst part is he struck out because he didn't swing. Got called out on the third strike. And Coach Don was telling him, don't get called out, Brandon. And when he got called out, Brandon started coming back to the dugout, and I looked him in the eye, and I yelled at him. And I yelled at him, and I said, "Did you not listen to Coach Pierce?" And I remember him walking back to the dugout. And I'm going to tell you, it broke my heart. It broke my heart that I had done that. I tried to go the rest of the game, and it turned out we wound up winning the game. So all is well, okay? But on the way home, we were in my truck. And when we would go home, Brandon and I would talk about the game. And I talked from the time we left Patrick Park till we got downtown. And he never looked at me. When we got downtown, and I pulled the truck over, and I said, "Brandon, what's wrong?" And he turned and looked at me. He had a tear coming out of his eye. And I promised him right then, I said, "That will never happen again. Ever." Do you remember that? Well, it was my moment, Brandon. Come on. See, the lesson I learned, though, that day, through, like we've shared with Ralph, is that my job is not to say anything negative when things go wrong. See, my job is, like Ralph says, when something goes wrong, it's merely a lesson, and you move on. I made a mistake that day, and I'll probably make another one, but it may happen. It might happen. But the key here is to be an encourager, to be an encourager all the time. See, the whole idea for this is when I was teaching those kids little things, what I knew had to happen, I had this in my head, is that when we got started practicing the first of the season, what I wanted to happen by the time we started playing games would be that I had 9 coaches on the field, not just players. I wanted them all to be coaches. I wanted them all to encourage one another. I wanted them to help one another, to be that kind of thing. See, the same thing applies for every time Buren preaches, Ralph preaches, and that's the purpose of this is I want all of you to be coaches. I want all of you to be coaches. I want you to be out there working towards encouraging people, getting them to where they need to be. I struggled a little bit just trying to figure out exactly how I wanted to end this 6 weeks, but here's how I want to end it. Every fairy tale starts with once upon a time, and it all ends with what? They lived happily ever after. From the tools that you receive here every Sunday when Buren preaches, the School of Positive Thinking, and right here, you have the tools to live happily ever after. And I want you to go do it, okay? Now, the other thing that I want to end this with, and I can't believe I didn't do it until tonight because I do it every time I make a toast. Every time I make a post. We'll make a toast after a while, but a post. How do you recover from that? There you go. Let me pray. Father, forgive me for what I just said. Thank you, Lord, for this time that we have here these past 6 weeks, and not just these 6 weeks, but every Sunday that we have right here. I'm thankful for Buren and Ralph and Will and all the leaders of this church who all understand this. Pastor Keith, Joe, and just on and on, dear Lord, people who stand up for you, who live these principles of being positive, of encouraging and loving everybody. And I pray that we'll go and we'll spread it everywhere we go in all that we go to do. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, go be the most positive, enthusiastic person you know.